You were talking before, when you're talking about neoadjuvant therapy, about this issue of endocrine therapy versus chemotherapy, and there's been this so-called across-the-pond difference where endocrine therapy neoadjuvantly is much more utilized and studied in Europe and the UK. Mm-hmm. What about the issue of adjuvant chemotherapy? And I'm particularly interested in your thoughts, again, across the pond in terms of some of the genomic analyses that are out there now, the Oncotype, the Mammoth Print. Is that something that you all are actually bringing into your practice?
I think, to me, the most impressive one of the genomic assays is Oncotype DX. Because of the way it's been done in patients who've been treated with tamoxifen, and it's been done in the B20 study, whereas the MammaPrint is not based on people who've actually had therapies before. Looking at it from Europe, looking across at the States, I think it looks very persuasive. The reality is, at present, it is used only minimally. But I suspect that's going to change. It's certainly not something that has been licensed, or in the UK we have this process called NICE, this group who look at cost efficacy, and it hasn't come to NICE yet. But, you know, the private sector often leads the NHS, and it's just beginning to drift into. And I suspect the more people look at these data, they seem to me very compelling.
Well, in addition to the clinical benefit is the issue of the economic impact.
Yes.
And, you know, if you start looking at the people who don't receive chemotherapy, and then the ones who do, maybe avoiding a relapse, which has tremendous financial consequences, maybe this actually plays out as being cost-effective as well as patient-friendly.
Once you look at these data in node-negative women, and you see that some women with large cancers, say 4 centimeter, greater than 4 centimeter cancers, that for us would be an indication for chemotherapy. And yet significant percentage of these are in the very low risk with Oncotype. So you've got a big saving there. But conversely, some women with less than 1 centimeter cancers that look like they're going to do very well actually have a high risk score. So,
and maybe even more importantly, is it looks like there's a pretty substantial risk reduction if you do treat.
And that's the point. That's exactly it. The high risk, those with the high recurrence score, have this extraordinary benefit of, what, 25%, 26%?
That's absolute.
Absolute. We're not talking.
Relative 75%.
So if you're a woman who's got a cancer that's got a high recurrence score, and you know that it's going to, I mean, that's very easy to sell that to somebody that, you know, we sit and agonize over 2 or 3% benefits with chemotherapy, and no one's very sure. But if we've got this 26, 27% benefit, it's a given. And my prediction is once it takes off in Europe, it's going to be very quick. It won't be a gradual thing. It's something that'll happen. And I guess that's happening in the States now.
Yeah, definitely. In our patterns of care studies, we've seen that change a lot in the last 2-3 years.
Yeah.
The other thing that's going to be interesting to see is now we're starting to see data coming out in node positive patients, particularly San Antonio.
Yeah.
But even before that, where do you see these kinds of approaches or Oncotype specifically fitting in patients with node-positive tumors?
Well, I think the principle is very important because there are already data. Kathy Albain presented data which she updates from time to time, which showed that some node-positive patients do not benefit from chemotherapy, do just as well without. So the node-positive, although it's been a very useful yardstick for many years, that in itself needs refining. So the answer is yes, I'm sure we're going to go down that road as well.